everybody, and welcome to episode number 47 of Girl Fight. My name is Nicole Tanner, and I'm your host. Today, I'm joined by Megan Sullivan.
Yay.
Stephanie Lee.
Hi.
And Dana Jung Award.
Hello.
Audrey and Christine are both deep in the woods playing and reviewing games. Audrey said she has like a day to review this one game, so that kind of sucks for her. Yeah, fun time. So that's why they're not with us today. And apologies for last week, but you know, people need vacation sometimes.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was awesome.
Tell us about your vacation.
Absolutely awesome. Very packed. I went to NYC for anybody who wasn't following me. We got in on Thursday evening and came back really early on Monday morning. So
you got three solid days in.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. My husband was gone for most of the first day because he was going for work. Mm-hmm. So he was in meetings. So I just went to Chelsea Market and hung out for a while down there, which is really cool. I was disappointed that in order to even get up the elevator to the Food Network, you need to have a little card. So it's like the building here,
basically. I was
going to
say, so like IGN.
But I found where the elevator was. It was actually... I was like spy girl because I was walking around Chelsea Market and I didn't see anything about Food Network because they have different elevators that go up to the different companies. Uh-huh. And so the Oxygen one, their elevator doors were painted, you know, with their logo and everything like that. And I'm looking around, and I couldn't find Food Network anything. So they had the James Beard Foundation had this pop-up restaurant going on in there. So I went in there and sat in there during lunch and there were people sitting next to me with Food Network hoodies on, and they were talking about booking Ann Burrell for something.
Okay.
And I'm like, those people obviously work for the Food Network. So I followed them after they got up to see where they were going. And that's when I found the elevator and then also found out
But
that
you didn't get in the elevator with them, like, sort of sneak on. Like,
no, I didn't.
Wait, I'm confused. Is this place... public, there's public access.
The downstairs is like a foodie heaven market. There's like, all kinds of, you know, bakeries and, you know, fish market and everything you can think of food wise is on the first floor, and that is completely open to the public. But there are businesses on the upper floors that, you know, you need a key card to get to. So
you could have been like one of the people that, you know, every once in a while will show up here and we'll be like, you know, you see the person lurking downstairs. I mean, we've had that happen a couple of times, you know. And you should bring them in. And
I did take a picture of the sign. It was like, approved guests and employees only. So, but anyhow, so that was fun. And on Saturday, I did the Sex in the City tour, which was lots of fun. It's actually a really good way to see the city.
Cool.
Because it was mostly a bus tour, but we stopped at certain places and got out and did stuff. It was confirmed that I'm pretty much the biggest Sex and the City dork in the world because I knew all the trivia questions that the tour guide was asking and nobody else did. So,
how many people were on the bus? Were there a lot or?
Probably about 40.
Oh, wow. That's
and from size. All over the world. I was shocked. There were people from, Australia, Canada, Germany, Belgium, Bulgaria, Russia,
wow.
And the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think that's it. In Wales.
Uh-huh. Did you stop and get a Cosmopolitan at any point?
Oh, yeah. We went to the bar that is supposed to be Scout, which is Steve's bar in the show. So it's not actually called Scout, but, you know, it is the bar that was used to film the internal stuff.
Right.
And So, that was cool. It was fun. And I did...
You ate at a lot of good restaurants, too.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I saw your tweet or Facebook thing about Butter.
Yes, Butter was amazing. Butter is Alexandra Guarnaschelli's restaurant. She's on Food Network here and there. She has a show called, like, Alex's Day Off. She used to have a show called Cooking Loft, but she's also been a judge on Iron Chef, and she's a frequent judge on Chopped. And her food was amazing. It was wonderful. I had this funky Caesar salad that had like weird Caesar dressing with like mustard in it. It was really good, and it had basil pesto on top of it as well. And then we had roasted duck breast for dinner, and that was unbelievable. The sauce that went with it was like hitting so many notes. It was like savory, sweet, and a little bit of heat like on the end.
So it wasn't like duck a la orange where you had the
orange
sauce.
No. And where else did I eat? We ate at Morimoto, which was excellent as well. We did the omakase, which is which translates like from the chef's heart or something. So it's a tasting menu where you just get little bits of pretty much everything, and that was wonderful as well. Where else? Oh, Colicchio and Sons. Tom Colicchio, as most people will know, head judge on Top Chef. His restaurant was very good as well. And I went to Bobby Flay's Bar American, which was actually pretty disappointing. It was just kind of...
I don't like Bobby Flay. Can I just throw that out there? He's on my permanent, like, ish list because of the tantrum or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
On Iron Chef. My friend... Misa and I have never forgiven him for that. It was just like embarrassing.
No, I agree with that. It was a little bit.
Well, I mean, he did almost get electrocuted. So, you know, I'd be upset as well.
I think his throwdown with Bobby Flay show is kind of cocky. It's like
Yeah, that's his problem. He's cocky.
He is very, he does come
up. Yeah, but he actually loses most of the times on Throwdown. Still, though. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what that show is all about, though.
It doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that was kind of, I mean, I ate at Mesa Grill in the Bahamas, which is really good, but this one was just kind of, And then I saw Avenue Q, which was hilarious.
I've heard good things about it, actually.
Oh, God, so funny. Sesame Street-ish parody, not for kids, definitely not for kids. You walk in the theater, there's a sign, and it says, warning, this show features full puppet nudity.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. I'm waiting for my husband to get all of our pictures off of our camera, and I'll post some stuff on my blog. So
awesome.
So yeah, so that's why there wasn't an episode last week. I was having fun in New York City. So sorry.
And then the rest of us got swamped up with work.
Yeah.
Thanks, E3. We love you too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gonna be rough these next couple weeks, but. Anyhow, that's what's up with us. So let's talk about what we've been playing. Dana, do you want to start this week?
I have been playing. I'm still not, because it takes me forever. Still not done with Portal, but I have gotten further. I'm close to the end now. I was sick this last weekend, so I was not playing any games. Been playing some of Sims 3 Generations, the upcoming expansion. And it's fine. It's The Sims, you know.
Yeah.
If you like The Sims, there's going to be some more stuff to do. If you don't like The Sims, okay.
And body hair.
Body hair on the men now. Yes.
Interesting.
Sounds revolutionary.
Part of what I was playing, and Nicole and I were actually talking about this because you actually had even more frustration. So part of why I was playing was we did a video preview. So it was to capture footage and capturing footage in The Sims is just maddening because you don't know if they're going to do what you need them to do. Like, so one of the things that happens in Generations, like, because you can play pranks as a teenager, but you also, there's the chance that you're going to get busted by the cops. And dude, I was out egging every house that I could and the cops were not showing up. And you're just like, how they're trying to do it over and over and over and over and over. And
yeah.
Finally got it to happen, but it was annoying.
The Sims has to be the worst game to try to capture video for because you know specifically the type of scene that you want to set up, but it's so hard to actually make it happen because there are so many variables. Right. Sims Medieval was the same way. And it was even worse because you can't switch characters. So, like, I was trying to get my husband to come into the house and, like, couldn't. I just had to wait for him, you know, because I couldn't take control of him. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, at least in this one, I could switch back and forth. But yeah, I mean, you can turn their free will all the way off. But then if you're like waiting like 18 hours, like so in this case, you could throw bachelor parties. But I couldn't throw it because it was like 3 a.m. So I had to wait to schedule it to like the next afternoon. So it was like speeding through and I had turned off their free will because I wanted them to do what I wanted them to do. But then... like over that 18 hours. So then they weren't like peeing when they needed to, and then they weren't eating and they were like about ready to fall asleep on their feet. Like they were about ready to just die of exhaustion. And I was like, oh, stupid Sims. and then I was also playing some Civ World, which both Nicole and I, were in last week. And that is the new Civilization game on Facebook. And it is actually being developed by Sid Meier, the creator of Civ. Himself,
yes.
And it's really pretty.
It's awesome.
Freaking cool.
It's wonderful.
It's definitely worth checking out. Like, it's
closed beta is launch is going up this week, And
we will actually have some keys. Yeah, it
sounds like
we're
going to get some codes that we can give away to people. So,
but yeah, then the open beta, I think that they were shooting for by this summer, June.
Yeah, late June, early July. Yeah.
So, keep an eye out for when it launches, because it's really cool because games end. Like each game is like a few hundred people, like I don't remember the exact number. So a few hundred people get in and everyone can choose. You can choose to pick a civilization and ally with them, and that basically becomes your team, or you can go it alone, and then you're trying to win. People are trying to win, you know, like you would in a regular game of Civilization by getting to the final, achieving one of the, you can win
cultural
either, cultural, economic, or war, military.
Or the space flight.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you're part of a civilization, you can all work together. You can switch civilizations at any time. But then if you're you also get like rewards within your individual civilization for like being there and being a good contributing member and everything. Mm-hmm. So if you leave, you lose all that and you're like back at the bottom of the thing. So that's kind of cool because like you can leave if your team sucks. But like there's also there's motivation to stick with it. It's I don't know. It's really cool. I'm really looking forward to getting to play more of it. Because we were in a very limited, like, we only had one game you could have three games going on at the same time. We only had one game we could access.
And we didn't get to finish that game either. It was like, my team members are probably like, where the hell did she go? Because I was super active.
Did we get
in
kicked
it.
Off? I haven't been.
We did. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure we did. I mean, I got an email saying, like, thanks, alpha testers. Like, we're in beta now.
Yeah.
And so I went to log on because it said, like, oh, you already have access to the game. But then it said, there's something wrong with your account. Please contact Take-Two Support. So yeah, so they kicked us out, unfortunately, which is, I feel bad leaving my team members kind of flailing because I was doing a lot.
Yes.
So, no. But anyhow, it was lots of fun. It's going to be awesome. It's Facebook games are going to change for the better.
Hopefully so.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Stephanie?
I finally finished Portal 2. In the single player campaign and the co-op.
Woo!
And I have to say that was one of the most satisfying endings for both that I've experienced recently. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then next, I've been playing L.A. Noire. I'm writing the guide for it. And I have to say, I am very, very impressed with L.A. Noire and like what Rockstar and Team Bondi have done with this game. It's like, it's quite an accomplishment. And I'm really disappointed hearing all the negativity from the community. I think that people
are. What are they bitching about?
They're saying that it's.
Is it too linear for them?
It's slow. It's kind of linear, and it's the way that Rockstar did this game is like it's the combat is de-emphasized. There's a lot more focus on narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like I would like it better.
I know,
than
yeah.
GTAs, yeah.
Like. Right, and so people expected Grand Theft Auto set in the 1940s, like so they can beat up like pedestrians and like get hookers or whatever, and just get rocket launchers and cause mayhem everywhere. But it's nothing like that because you're a cop and you're out to solve crimes and just basically, You're like the sole shining example of justice in this whole city of that's
corrupt.
Clearly corrupt.
Like,
right.
So you don't have the option to play bad cop if you need to.
No, you can't play bad cop. It's just the game actually restricts you from running people over because if you actually nudge someone while you're driving, it will say that you'll be penalized at the end because you get graded for every case you do or based on the performance of. Based on your performance within that case.
Mm-hmm. But you can't, like, you know how they really well play good cop, bad cop, they have two different people.
Oh, right. Your partner usually is the bad cop.
So you don't have that option to switch it up a little
bit. No, he's like he's always a skeptic and he never backs you up until, like, and you switch partners throughout the whole game.
I have to admit that is a little disappointing sounding because I'm like, that would be kind of cool if you had options. Like,
do you pick bad ever?
Do I pick bad ever?
Mm-hmm. Like
you,
when you're
you
playing
like that
other
option
stuff?
Of being a,
I mean,
a bad
I
person?
Liked it like in Mass Effect too. Like there were some times where you could do something rogue. Like you had that option and that would be fun. Like I usually try to mix it up a little bit just depending on, I don't deliberately do good or bad. I just look at the initiative, but it would be interesting to see if you had the option of, you know what, you could extract a confession, but the consequence of doing it and being brutal would come about later or something like that.
Yeah, but it, I mean, I would think, is it kind of like a bully sort of setup though? I mean, because bully,
I never
was,
played bully.
Okay,
I heard that like the supporting cast of characters was really strong.
Yeah, it was. I mean, well, and it was from what I remember, because it's been, I don't know how long since I've 5 years since I played the whenever it came out. But it was a very similar sort of setup where it was like, it was a predetermined set of things. Like you were currying favor. I mean, but it was kind of almost an artificial like thing. I mean, you were just like, you were completing the mission. This is how the mission was set out.
But I'm
really glad,
like going on what Megan said, I'm glad that Rockstar chose not to let you choose to be a bad cop and just kill people, because the point of the noir genre is like the protagonist is just this guy trying like that with a sense of helplessness, and he's always trying to do something to fix something.
Yeah.
But in the end, he can only break even.
Right.
Yeah. That kind of deal.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't played it yet, but it sounds to me like I would like it just fine. I mean, I like Mass Effect and Dragon Age and the kind of, you know,
the choices
that you can make. And I think, you know, gamers are kind of getting stuck into this. Well, I can make choices in this game, so I should be able to make choices in every game. But not every game needs to be like that.
Right.
If it's well done and the story's told well, then.
Well, and honestly, most of the games that you can make choices in, it's like, how much does that really actually impact the game? I mean, a lot of them are kind of like artificially. Right. Like, it doesn't actually matter.
And one of the biggest complaints lodged against this, lodged against the game is that there's an open world element. There's a giant Los Angeles city for you to explore, but Rockstar didn't put too much interactivity in the city that you can like.
There's so not a lot of side missions.
Yeah. There are side missions. There's just not much you can do within the city other than finding like landmarks. There's collectibles. There are some side missions. Like these are just basically street crimes you can answer and solve. But the most impressive thing, I think, that is the motion scan technology that Team Bondi has pioneered, which basically captures like all the nuances of an actor's acting. You can see like the subtle gestures, the facial animations. You can see like them swallowing really nervously. Mm-hmm. You can see a nervous twitch. So during an interview, all of this really shines through, and you use that to like basically determine whether the person's lying, telling the truth.
Very cool.
That kind of stuff. So I'm really impressed.
So there's actually legit body language and facial tics.
So can you actually learn how to tell when people are like lying or telling the truth? Is it based off of actual forensic?
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. No, that is cool.
I feel like gestures are universal. Like a surprise gesture would have your eyebrows raised.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then when people are lying, they usually have their eyes or like avert to the side, right? Right.
Yeah.
And then you can see them nervously scratch their neck. And if they're telling the truth, they're like staring straight at you without the slightest change in their gesture. So they're obviously telling the truth. So that kind of stuff is pulled from real life. And so the significance of this technology kind of, to me, feels like the same significance that Grand Theft Auto introduced when they introduced the open world element. Like it really breaks down the barriers of what a video game can do. And so LA Noire introduces this how close to delivering a great narrative and while at the same time balancing mechanics can we get with video games.
Right.
It's really cool.
Cool.
I totally plan on picking it up. Hopefully. Maybe even today. This weekend, if not today. I'm interested in it.
Yeah, me too. Megan, how about you?
I just finished for the second time Dragon Age Legends Remix, which we exclusively have on IGN.com for everyone to play. And I don't normally play many Flash games. I tend to play them for a little bit and then I kind of get bored and quit. But this game is really legit awesome. So good job, Yvonne Miller, for busting out a really cool hack and slash version of Dragon Age Legends. I recommend everyone go on IGN.com. and play it. And I'm not just plugging that because I work here. I actually legit had fun. I was surprised how much fun I had. This little Flash game that all the controls are with the mouse and it's very responsive and very fast paced. And
it's free.
It's free.
There's no reason not to play it.
Yeah. There really isn't.
And you don't even have to sit through an ad at first.
No,
or
no, you don't. It's really fun. It's got like really like good quality animation and the music's pretty cool and the environments are cool. Like I was just surprised how much I actually liked it. I was like, well, I'm a Dragon Age fan, so I feel obligated to play this. I've played Legends in both Dragon Age games and pretty much anything else Bioware can throw out there, but this was actually a legit fun game. So I've played easy, normal, and then I'll play the third round I'll play hard. And yeah, so I'm enjoying that. And I'm also continuing Final Fantasy IV, the complete collection, on my PSP. I'm almost to the end of the original game. I'm at the Tower of Babel right now and having a blast because this is a game from my childhood. It's my favorite game of all time. So for me, Final Fantasy IV is kind of like comfort gaming. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm like really stressed or whatever, I'll pop in Final Fantasy IV. So I'm going to finish that hopefully by today or tomorrow and then go to the After Years, which are all the WiiWare downloads that you could get last year or the year before, but they're all in one collection. Mm. Thus the name, Final Fantasy IV, the collection, complete collection. And what else am I playing? I started Okami. Because I've actually never played that game. And everyone was like, oh, why? You love Japan. What is wrong with you? And I'm like, it was never a question of if. It was always a question of when.
Are you playing it on the Wii or the PS2?
I'm actually borrowing Dan Iverson's PS2 copy right now. And I started that, I think, last weekend. And it got off to a little slow of a start. It was a little slow at first. But once I got the hang of it and now the world is opening up, I'm liking it more and more. And I love the art style and music.
The art style is amazing.
Yeah, the art style is definitely amazing. And at first there was something wonky about it because it was set to standard TV, but I have an HD TV. So once I figured that out, I was like, oh, that's what's wrong. I was going to get all mad at the game. I was like, nope, that's me. Mm-hmm. So once I got the settings correct, it actually really made a huge difference. And now I love the art style and music. And the game gets funner. Although I hear that it does get long.
It is. It's not a short game. I like the PS2 version better. The only thing I liked better about the Wii version was that you could actually like click to speed up the dialogue sorts of stuff. So like, which, cause that drove me nuts in the PS2. I just get really, I'm like, come on. Like
yeah, I admit that was part of.
I don't need to watch every word scroll out every single piece of dialogue.
Yeah. That was I think that's why it was so slow in the beginning. Cause you have so much dialogue and you're like, oh, come on there. Cause they're not actually speaking. They're making these cute little noises. Me, 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 me.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, that's adorable, but not after like 15 minutes of dialogue where I'm like, I just want to play the game.
Yeah.
So.
But the Wii version controls, I wasn't a big fan of.
Yeah.
So. About the Wii version as well is if you look very, very closely in the bottom corner of the cover, you can see part of an IGN watermark.
Yes. Yeah, that is, it is true.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's the cover.
Wow. I don't know. Their marketing person, whoever did the cover, like apparently couldn't find the art and just crammed it off IGN.
You'd think the Wii version would be more conducive to the drawing mechanic of the game, right?
It wasn't bad, but I just preferred using the DualShock. It was just, for me, it was more intuitive. And like, you would just get stuff every once in a while when it wouldn't be registering right. And you're like, ugh.
I'm curious to see how Okami Den is on the DS, because that's like the perfect game for that kind of gameplay where you have the stylus to swipe everything and draw
is it
things
out yet?
Because.
Audrey 8, I think.
Yeah, so she liked it. And it just seems like a better mechanic because I swear I am ridiculous. I'm having a hard time drawing things so that the game recognizes that's not a square, that's a circle, that's a sun. I swear it is. So I've ran into that a couple of times. I'm like, ugh, if I could play this on the DS, I bet it would be a little more intuitive because of the stylus. So I'm actually going to probably pick up Okami then at some point and see how that is.
Maybe I'll pick that up too.
Cool. I have been playing more Infamous, which is on my list of, you know, great games I never
You could have downloaded it for free.
Yeah, no kidding.
Not yet. You can't.
Not yet. Not yet.
The store's not up.
I know.
But I mean, I can download it after. I just borrowed it from the library, so it's not like I bought it.
Yeah.
So if I had bought it, then I would be like cursing Sony. Yeah. But it's pretty cool. I mean, it's got the same kind of camera issues that every third person action has. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that has been getting annoying is the fact that he can climb on pretty much anything in the world. I find when I jump to something, he'll end up grabbing something else nearby. And I'm like, no. You know, jump on that pole, not on that block. And, you know, and sometimes he'll just stop like on the top of poles and like balance on his toes. And that's not what I wanted you to do. I wanted you to jump over it, you know. So I'm having a little bit of frustrations with that. But overall, it seems pretty cool. And then I also have been playing Lego Pirates of the Caribbean, which is adorable and fun, just like all the Lego. I mean, there's nothing new here.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of Lego antics. But the thing that is actually most hilarious about it is the Jack Sparrow character, the way that he runs, mm-hmm. his animation, he's got his like arms flailed out to the side and kind of like acting like all drunk and stuff. It's freaking hilarious. It was like perfect, you know, spot on for that character. So that's fun. And I played the portable versions of it for review actually. Shocked myself in that the 3DS version, the 3D does actually make a difference in the gameplay, the platforming areas. Because being able to see the depth of field is actually really helpful in, you know, landing your jumps, which I was shocked about. I'm like, oh, you know, it looks pretty. I'm sure that's all that's going to be it. But no, it actually helps the gameplay.
So your eyes have adjusted to the 3D effect?
You know what? I didn't have any trouble with it at all. And I played that game for probably about 5 or 6 hours straight.
Oh, wow.
With the 3D on. And yeah, I didn't have any trouble.
Wow.
You've got like eyeballs of steel.
I guess. I don't know.
Because I only looked at the 3DS once for like 5 minutes and I started to get that headache.
Yeah, it didn't give me a headache or anything. And I don't know if that's like the only game I've really played on the 3DS. I don't know if maybe the 3D was just done better in that game than it is in some others, but I didn't have any trouble with it. Huh. So
cool.
So yeah, that the 3DS version is actually the version that I would recommend checking out.
Are you going to buy a 3DS now? No.
No. I think...
Did any of us buy a 3DS? Did you?
No. Nope.
Yeah. Although we might end up getting one, but not buying one, because my husband's publisher side producer on his last project made a deal with him that if they hit street date, he would buy him a 3DS. And they did hit street date. Right. And Isaac completely forgot about it. And he's like, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden he gets an Amazon gift certificate for the amount of a 3DS from this guy. So we kind of have to get
one. He was like, or I could buy.
Right, yeah. I was like, that's what I told him. I'm like, well, maybe we should get some.
And I guess
like,
you have a Nook.
You know, that's, he's like, you're missing the point. Yeah. I mean, even though he's not crazy about getting one either, so.
To be fair, though, I usually wait out a system's, to getting a system. Like, I don't, I rarely get it at launch. I think the only system I've gotten at launch was a PS2.
The only system I bought at launch was the PSP. hilarious.
I don't know if I've ever bought a system at launch.
I got the PS2 at launch, but that was.
I was working at. To be fair, I was working at Official PlayStation Magazine when I got the PSP at launch, and I already knew that I loved and was addicted to Lumines. Lumines was the whole reason why I bought a PSP at launch because we had the Japanese one in the office, and like I kept hogging it. And like,
did you have Dead Pixels in your PSP?
Not right away. I had a couple. Then that one got stolen.
That was a widespread problem with a launch PSP. I remember like praying that I wouldn't get any, but then I ended up having like this one hairline dead pixel or whatever was wrong with it, like some kind of defect.
Right.
But I've kind of lived with it since.
Mine got stolen from the offices of the GameTap, where I was working at the time, got broken into, and all of our stuff got taken. But they paid for me to replace it, so that was good.
I bought my PSP off of a former coworker, which was a pretty good deal. So I never had any of those kind of problems. Yeah. But
I replaced mine, and then I don't think I've ever played it.
Yeah. I'm hoping, though.
That was like 3 years ago.
I'm hoping that, because I had no interest in getting the 3DS, and I keep hoping that Nintendo will announce a bunch of cool new IPs at E3 for it, because otherwise this is going to be really disastrous.
I know.
Little platform.
No, they have some good. Yeah. They have some good games lined up for it later in the year.
But there's.
But it's not anything not, that you haven't played before.
Yeah. Kid Icarus, I've heard mixed things about. Ocarina of Time. How many times can you port that gamer type of game? So I'm kind of like, you know, in order for me to actually plunk down money for that.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, how many times could you play Ocarina of Time? I'm like, let's ask Audrey.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because there's apparently many.
Yes, apparently so. I understand. It is a very good game. I am just saying that I don't need to play it on the 3DS when I already have it downloaded on my virtual console Wii and just keep going back to that. Or some people still have their original GameCube and they play it on that, or
N64.
Was it N64?
It's the original. Yeah.
Wind Waker.
I don't want to have all the Nintendo boys writing in being like, man doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it because I don't really care.
I'm curious about Kid Icarus.
I mean, but I want Kid Icarus to be I don't know why.
But it's not true to the original. It's like an on-rail shooter, which kind of feels like Star Fox to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm still just kind of like being a skeptic and seeing where
I am mildly curious. I am mildly curious, but only because Kid Icarus is one of those games where the original just frustrated me. I rage quit that game so many times as a kid. I wrecked my NES, like kicking and hitting it because I'd get knocked off of something and I'd fall all the way back down. I forget what level that is. Probably all of them, but that game makes me furious to think about to this day. So
it was a hard game.
It was a really it was a hard game. Yeah, it was. So
yeah,
but nonetheless, I'm curious about this new game.
Yeah, we'll see. I want something new. Like, the only existing Nintendo franchise that I would be excited about if they announce a new one, and hopefully they will, is Pikmin.
I thought you were going to say Picross. I'm not happy about that. I'm like, yeah, I'm Picross. Although I still haven't finished 3D from last summer.
Yeah, I haven't either.
It's kind of hard.
I know. I like the idea of Miyamoto or whoever having mushrooms and just doing his whole creative thing.
Right.
We talked about that last time. That would be a great, great idea.
When's the last time? It was Pikmin the last new franchise they did?
I think Pikmin was the last one. I mean, people can write in and correct us if we're wrong, but I'm pretty sure Pikmin was the last new original
Nintendo franchise.
I'm trying to think.
Maybe that. Okay,
or like one that was, I mean, because you had stuff like Rhythm. And Heaven, Nintendogs. Which I call Rhythm Nation every single time.
Nintendogs was one as well.
I would argue that Nintendogs is not really a franchise so much as a,
What about
I know it is technically a franchise.
The
but
Wii stuff, the Wii Sports, the Wii.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we can talk about that.
Again,
yeah.
Nothing. There's no, like, Bannerman or some sort of like, character that you can create a franchise off of, like Mario or Yoshi or Link.
I mean,
we always
demand, like, a new IP, but I don't, publishers are just going this direction where they're just going to crank out successful sequels to already successful titles. It's a huge risk
for most
to
publishers
dump.
I would agree, but I don't think Nintendo would have that problem, seriously.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it's Nintendo.
Yeah, you got a good point there.
Yeah, everybody else I'm totally like, with you, but
one new franchise every 5 years, is that so much to ask?
Yeah.
But I don't think they've really disappointed with any of with their new IPs. Like Pikmin was good.
Mm-hmm.
The Wii party, the Wii music, like
Wii music
is still sold.
Oh, I know.
It did phenomenally.
Which would argue that they could make something good instead of Wii music.
Yeah.
Oh, Wii music, that game was.
Are you
really
excited
for
Exercise Beat or whatever?
Oh, Exerbeat. That was not Nintendo, but yes. Oh, we got a package that had Exerbeat in it for the Wii.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put it on Colin's desk.
Nice.
Yeah.
Colin runs our library. It wasn't for him to play. Okay. So that's what we're playing. And so our topic this week, which we're getting to a little late, but that's okay, is Gabe Newell, who is the president and co-founder of a little developer called Valve. And that's sarcasm, people, so don't write in trying to correct me. I'm just in a bad mood today. he had a really, really long interview with Develop Magazine, which is basically the UK equivalent of Game Developer Magazine or Gama Sutra. And this is the full interview is on their website that you can check it out and read it. He said lots of really, really cool things in there, such as like that I'm looking at Facebook and social and mobile and how there are things to be learned and all that kind of stuff. But one of the more controversial things that he said is that the way that you pay for games now is basically broken. The one price that you plop down when you buy a game in a retail store. He says he actually called it a bug. That's a bug. It's something we need to fix. And basically he said he would like to look at a pricing service where what you pay is based on your value as opposed to the game's value, such as if you're very popular in the community and you're likely to get a lot more people to play the game, you would get games for cheaper. And if you are a troll who pisses everybody off, you would have to pay more. So, what do we think about that?
I mean, I think it's an intriguing concept. I worry from a personal level just because I never, hopefully the people who have zero impact on a community, which are pretty much me, would just pay about the same that we normally have.
Yeah.
Like, because if I was having to pay more because I didn't provide stuff of value, which I would argue that I don't.
Yeah.
That would make me sad. I'm like, what about those of us who just want to just play and yeah. not interact? I find it, and I think it's probably the nature of our jobs because, you know, that trolling behavior extends to IGN. And this is not a, oh God, our poor us and poor, you know, my job is so hard. Because no, we have good jobs and I'm not saying that. But it can get really wearing to be trolled.
Oh yes.
In one's professional life on a daily basis. And so the thought that there would be some sort of consequence for the trolling is something that I like. Yeah. That I like as an idea. I mean, how would you judge though right. How would you judge the worth of a player? Like that's to me is the part that could get a little weird and scary. Yeah. Although I would argue that if anyone was going to figure out a good way to do it, Valve would have the best shot.
Yeah. I mean, also to me, this doesn't seem very different from like a customer loyalty program that anybody else would have, mm-hmm. you know, like, I don't know if Amazon does mm-hmm. it or not, but like,
they don't.
You know, I mean, there are lots, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know that there mm-hmm. are lots where if you buy a lot of stuff from the same store, mm-hmm. they give you discounts on right. future stuff. So, you know, it's not like it's a business model that hasn't been explored before.
Right. But I think in this way that they also punish you for being a poor customer.
Yeah, the punishing part is a little different. But as far as rewarding the good players, you know, I think that that's...
I'm just glad that Valve is actually offering a solution to this price, this business model.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it's really cool. But like Dana said, it's hard to judge the value of a player, and that's going to be highly controversial. I don't know mm-hmm. if they'll be able to get it down to a science and be able to like make mm-hmm. everyone happy.
Yeah.
And especially in competing in or trying to do this business model in like a capitalistic environment. I don't know if that would succeed.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well, and it obviously only applies to certain types of games. Like yeah. I was thinking about like Valve games. I'm like, okay, so you could do this with a Team Fortress 2. Like it makes sense. But like Portal, like
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, yes, there's a little multiplayer, but it's like co-op, obviously. You know.
And the definition of a popular person mm-hmm. in the community is pretty nebulous. Like a big troll, a big ass troll can mm-hmm. be very popular.
Yeah.
And then like a really good player that no one wants to play with because he's just going to like own everyone could be very popular too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just,
Or unpopular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I would be inclined to think that like a really good player would be Valve's most dedicated customer.
Mm-hmm.
And then so to shun him because he's not as popular because he keeps killing people is like kind of punishing their most valued customer or a loyal mm-hmm. customer.
Yeah.
Of, you know, in a sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely kind of out there. And this is just something that he was just spouting off in an interview.
Right.
It's not like anything that they are actually implementing. So don't freak out. But I mean, it kind of brings us back to the topic we talked about a little bit last week, which is the, you know, the changing business model for the industry as a whole.
Service, games as service.
And he says that actually uh-huh. in this interview as well, that we need to start thinking of games as service instead of games as product. And, you know, with the free to play, you know, business model being proven to be more profitable than
or that it can
traditional
be more profitable.
It can be more profitable than traditional business models. I mean, this is an exciting time to be following the industry, mm-hmm. I think, because we're going to see some big shifts in the next couple years. I have mm-hmm. a feeling. So
I'm really ambivalent about like microtransactions. Like personally, I wouldn't spend even like a dollar on an item for my avatar or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm there with you in that. I can't ever imagine spending money on virtual costumes and stuff.
Yeah.
But I have spent virtual money real money on like getting more energy, like getting more stuff like that, getting items that I need to finish a quest, like on Facebook games. I have spent money and I didn't think I would do that, but no, I would never buy a shirt for an avatar to wear.
I guess what I was trying to say is that like the younger generation will be more, can easily more acclimate to this new microtransaction kind of business model. They'll be more willing to shell out their parents' money to buy this stuff.
You're making me feel old as I'm looking at you sitting here saying the younger generation. I'm like, so two below me then.
No. I mean, because like when we were playing games, like even online now, like this all this buying extra like virtual goods is new to us, still relatively new.
Yeah.
So
and I think that there you definitely see some companies who are trying to play it both ways, you know, charging the retail price mm-hmm. and the flat retail price, and then also trying to do microtransactions monetization afterward. And that I think, I mean, when I see that, I feel like it's like, okay, now you're just being greedy bastards. Like, yeah. Put it all.
No double dipping. There.
Yeah, do pick one way or the other. It's like either give someone a complete satisfying game in one package, mm-hmm. or like give it to them and have them pay as they go. But don't do both.
Yeah.
Like Activision, I think, is totally going to be going down that road with Call of Duty.
You know, Activision is, they're a weird one because they're basically the only big publisher that hasn't released a Facebook game as of yet.
Uh-huh.
They're behind. I mean, you know, the other publishers are, you know, they're behind too, but they're not as behind as Activision.
They're at least
is.
Experimenting and trying to figure
out. I think they're sitting contently on their mountain of money from Call of Duty. So I think they're
And World of Warcraft.
And World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
And StarCraft. Yeah.
And Megan. Diablo 3 upcoming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just stuck on the idea of putting a price on players just in general. I don't care if you troll or not. I don't really feel like there's a good measurement for that. Even if you are a troll, I'm not necessarily sure that you should be punished. You should be, if you're constantly breaching terms of service or something, then out you go. But I don't like this idea of rewarding or, you know, punishing players, because there's no way to measure that. And it just, there are too many variables in it. And it strikes me as just a little bit of price gouging. Like, it sounds like when you spin it, oh, it's so great, it's for the player's benefit. You know, we'll get rid of trolls that way, and we'll reward certain players. But I can't shake the feeling this is just another way to get around certain things to make more profits on their video games. I don't trust the bottom line being anything, but we want more money, and therefore we are going to charge people for it. It is a feeling I cannot shake, and I don't think that even charging trolls a little bit more money to play games is going to stop them irregardless.
I would have that issue coming from some publishers. I really feel like from what I have know of Valve's games and from what I've seen from them, like that one of Valve's top priorities is, you know, and obviously they make mountains of money, have made mountains of money doing this, but like that to Valve what really matters is like, is this going to make the game better? Are we going to put out a good game? I mean, it's why their whole library is so well respected. I mean, you don't see people being like, you know, like you don't see Valve releasing stuff that's an obvious cash in. You know, there's stuff. If you actually look at, there's a really, they put out a really cool, it's an iPad app, but now it's also available on Steam to download this thing, like kind of a look behind the scenes at Portal 2. And it's, like just looking at like all the kind of iterations and versions that got thrown away, it's like stuff that it's like, okay, this isn't working, we're not going to do it. Whereas a lot, you know, and obviously they have a freedom, they're privately owned and funded, so they don't have shareholders that they're having to deal with. And I understand the constraints that other companies have to deal with, but like they can afford to throw away stuff that other companies would never throw away, because it's like, well, yeah, we could throw this away, but we could also just put it out because we already put some time in it, so you might as well put it out there, and then if we can make some money off of it, great. Like, I just feel like Valve is not doing this as a money grab. Like, that their whole motivation to do so would be to make their games better experiences for the players.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And again, it's not guaranteed that they're going to do this.
No, this is...
You know, the other interesting that came up in this interview is just the way Valve functions as a studio, in that nobody has any titles, and you basically come in and kind of figure out what it is that you do best and do it. You know, you don't have people telling you you're working on this project for this long and blah, 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 blah. You're expected to find your way yourself, where you fit in and work that way, which I think is really interesting.
After Orange Box came out, like they took a 3-month period where the whole company just went in, like experimented with stuff and like, later like nobody was working on developing any titles for them. Like, it was just like, all right, we're taking this 3-month period for experimenting, and then afterward everyone presented, it's like, hey, this is what I came up with. And it was just like, go do whatever you want to do, and people just pair it up, and then they present all
that
stuff.
That's fine. If it works with Valve, great, but I'm saying that if other companies start getting this idea, I don't trust them nearly on that level.
No, that's
and therefore
fair.
I am extremely skeptical about whether in a real life situation, theoretically, whether this would work or not. Because I'm like, again, how you measure that is there's no way to do so.
Yeah.
You'd have to be overtly troll-like or, you know, like a really amazing customer, mm-hmm. you know, to
deviate from
say
that
for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Say for sure. Okay. You are a very loyal customer. You've done, you know, really cool stuff with our game and you're always on and we'll give you a discount. And okay, this person is clearly a troll and they are driving mm-hmm. people crazy and they're always getting complaints. So maybe we'll punish them or, hey, you want to stay on this community and not get kicked off? You're going to have to pay a little more money. But again, it's how do you measure that if you don't have extremes? Because there's all sorts of gray in between there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see that as being an actual business model that any of the other publishers would even be able to pull off. It would be a complete failure. Yeah. I think,
and the backlash would be
in the backlash. Yeah, I think we're more likely to see a shift to a free to play model than we are anything else. Yes. Quite frankly. So, all right. So, what are your thoughts on this? Write in and tell us how much you think you're worth as a player. Just kidding.
$1 million.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to questions. As always, if you have questions, you can send those to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. First question comes to us from James. James wanted to know if any of us noticed that Jessica Chobot was listed in the special thanks on the credits in Dragon Age 2.
Oh, did
I? Read that somewhere.
Yes, we did notice. Christine is not here, but her and I both had dinner with Jess the last night she was in town before she left. And Jess, she had no idea that she was going to be in it. It's like the person who was writing out the credits is in love with her or something, and so put her in there. So
awesome. You know, she was as surprised as all the rest of us. Like when she was playing it, she was like, in fact, was she in the office when she saw it? She started like squealing and jumping up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what she was jumping up and down squealing about? Okay. Yeah. I always wondered about that.
Yeah, so it's not any, you know, kind of weird stuff going on her part. It's just, you know, some game developer at BioWare is in love with her. So I'm sure he's not the only one.
Yes.
Okay, next question comes to us from Abu. Abu wants us to suggest some games for PS3 that doesn't require much internet usage because he's got a crappy internet connection.
Well, and it hasn't really mattered in the past.
Right, yeah.
Funny you mentioned that.
Most of the games on PS3 have a decent single player component. Yeah. The Ratchet and Clank games.
Uncharted.
Heavy Rain.
The infamous God of War.
Yeah.
Nier.
Yep.
Nier is on 360 as well.
Katamari.
PS3.
Katamari, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, you know, really the only ones I can think of that are super, that are heavy multiplayer are things like Killzone or SOCOM.
Yeah.
So I think you're pretty safe on PS3. Yeah. And
you should get Portal and play co-op with a friend in the same room.
Yes. Yep. I you know, agree with that. I've had a lot of fun with my husband.
Seriously, I'm gonna have to write into our own podcast and see if people can give me ideas to make him play with me. I guess I could be less mean when we play.
And he also has a little other question for us. When we're playing games, not for review, just for our personal entertainment, do we play on normal or hard?
Oh, never hard.
I always play normal or easy, depending on how particularly lazy I am. But I never really get past like normal.
Yeah, I typically play on normal. I have played a few things on hard, usually because that was my second time playing mm-hmm. through the game for whatever reason, and I wanted it to
Your husband has challenged you.
I wanted it, my husband has challenged me, or, you know, I wanted my experience to at least be a little bit different. The couple of those are BioShock, the first one, and God of War 3. God of War 3 was because I had to play it on easy because I was writing about it for What They Play, and I had a day to get through it, so I had to play it on easy to get through it in a day. And so when I played it the second time for my enjoyment, I did it on hard, just and because my husband challenged me. Yes,
I generally play on normal as well. The only exception to that is Gears of War, where I go straight to hardcore with my friend, and then we just blow through it because it's a lot more fun that way, I feel. But recently I found myself short on time, so I would like for shorter games like Homefront or Crisis. Actually, I finished Crisis 2 on normal, but Homefront, I cranked it down to easy mode, so I can just blow through it even more quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I personally get zero enjoyment out of, like, to me, that's not why I play a game. Like, to be, I find it frustrating. I'm not a great gamer.
Yeah.
And so I have zero interest in doing something masochistic just to see if I can get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of us don't, like you were saying, have the time to do that either. Alrighty, next question comes to us from Alan. Alan wants to know who we romanced in Dragon Age 2 and why. Spoilers. I romanced, what's his, I can't even remember his name now.
Which?
The mage guy.
Anders.
Anders, yes. I romanced Anders, and he seemed to be the only viable person for me to romance. At that time. Oh, he also wants to know who we don't like, who we didn't like. And I totally hated the Meryl, the elf chick.
The elf blood mage or whatever
yeah.
she
is. She was annoying.
Yeah. I also romanced Anders. I tried going after, God, I can't think of the male elf's name, but he got so emo on me at one point, so ridiculous. I was like, forget you. I'm tired of you complaining and not liking anything I do. So, and then Anders does something that I didn't approve of, and I didn't like that either. And I was like, man. We need the equivalent of an Alistair in this game. They don't have it, and I'm so upset about that. So, yeah, I romanced Anders, and I didn't like... I thought the blood elf, or the blood mage elf was fine, but it was... God, who disapproved of everything I did? I do. I think it was the male elf who just...
Fenris?
Fenris, yes. I could not think of his name. I was like, just everything I did, he was upset about. And I was like, would you just leave me alone? I don't care anymore if you don't approve.
Shut up. Go away.
Shut up. Go away.
On my playthrough, I actually flirted with everyone I could. With initially, I intended to romance Fenris.
Uh-huh.
But for some reason, I angered him. I can't remember what
really
I did.
Which is really easy to do.
Right. So I angered him. And then I just decided to pursue Anders, and that worked out. But probably my least favorite character was Avalyn, because she was just too straight-laced.
Oh.
Yeah. It was hard to get anything by her, like, the way I played. So I just took her out of my party, too.
Yeah, she was saying, I mean, I played pretty much the good gal most of the time, so there was very little that she got pissed off at me about, so.
Yeah, Meryl got mad a lot.
Yeah, Meryl was hard to...
Meryl was really hard to please. It was like, what do you want? I don't even care anymore.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes to us from Ryan. Ryan says that he and his wife used to play Halo 3 all the time, and they would totally dominate everybody that they were playing with. But as soon as anyone found out that they were playing with a girl, that schooled them, basically. They would get pissed off and say that she was fat or ugly and blah, blah, blah. And he wants to know, do we run into this very often during online games? And why are so many people still under the impression that girls don't play video games?
I mean, we've talked about this. I don't play online that much.
I turn off voice chat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, I mean, it's definitely something that happens, and this is not exclusive to IGN, like, it's happened at everywhere I work, that if a female writes something that people are getting riled up about, that it goes almost automatically to attacks on appearance, like, even if there's no picture of her anywhere near or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it seems to be just kind of a, I don't know, I guess it's what dudes do. I guess
y'all feel
threatened that I guess that's the low blow that you can think of. Whereas, you know, with dudes, they're dumbasses or whatever. But with women, like, it's definitely fat and ugly are two of the very first things that I see get pulled out.
I do think that Greg Miller has been subjected to the fat and ugly as well.
Yeah.
So.
But Greg has been subjected to it because, like, if he
does
has
stuff
a photo,
with his shirt off.
He takes his shirt off a lot. Yeah. Like that isn't like, if nobody had ever seen a picture of Greg Miller and he hadn't done that, I don't think he would get it.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying
you're right.
That I think that Greg is fat or ugly.
Yeah.
He just does take his shirt off a lot.
Yeah.
I think the part the
in like, public.
One of the main problems is that there's just a lot of, I'm sorry to say this, there's just a lot of straight up like woman haters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the social social stigma of like girls needing to be perfect and need to be a certain body size or body type. This kind of like perpetuates this like hatred towards women when they actually can do something better than guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I actually do get that a lot. But when I was playing World of Warcraft, I was actually raid leader and one of the best healers. or actually in the guild. Uh-huh. And I didn't get, I got a lot of flack for that at first, but then as people got to play with me more, uh-huh. like they started to, you know, respect me in some way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it can go the opposite way where I always feel bad for Chobot because a lot of people think she, you know, well, the only reason you're around or you probably don't mm-hmm. play games well. You're just some hot chick who mm-hmm. just decided to get into the industry by, you know, licking a PSP. And she's a very dedicated gamer and a good writer. And people refuse to see that because if she doesn't approve of something, they feel very threatened. So they go the opposite way. Well, yeah. your opinion doesn't matter. You're just some dumb hot chick. You know.
There's a lot of, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of misogyny, I feel, yeah. like among the, at least among the gaming sphere. And a lot of it, it's like, okay, you got a lot of teenage boys. I remember yeah. seeing a comment once and it cracked me up. I was like, oh, sweetheart, you poor thing. It was something about girl fight. And he had commented on, he was like, I don't want to listen to a bunch of girls talk because, like, I have to deal with girls all the time yeah. in my real life, so I don't want to deal with
it. I think I saw that
like,
comment.
And I was like, oh, I'm like, I could just envisioning this, like, poor 14-year-old kid, like, in junior high, like, he's that he's just like,
he got
the
rejected.
Girls aren't looking at him. Yeah. And yeah,
he asked a girl out, she rejected him or something really yeah. sad.
Or he's just afraid like, oh, to talk to her. And being 14, it was a, I hated it. It was yeah. It's a horrible, awkward experience. But awful. It was just so, like, I was like, and I think that's where a lot of it comes from. But, I mean, at times I can just be like, you know, okay, whatever, you all will grow up. But sometimes then I find it disheartening and just kind of, yeah. like, very, very backwards and weird just because nobody who I work with here is that way at all. And like, and we're right. all gamers. And so just when that pops up, you're like, really? Like,
but I yeah. think it's hard to tell whether someone's that way and just talking to them in real life. Because it's much yeah. easier to, you know, get on the internet and troll. And that's mm-hmm. when you're like, yeah. your true, I guess, mm-hmm. feelings about women or whatever that you're talking about come out. And I was going to say something that I can't remember what it was.
Well, all I know is that if, according to our YouTube comments from our IGN PAX video, there's a lot of men out there who don't know how to make a sandwich. And they wanted us to go back into the kitchen and make a sandwich
that
for them. I am going to one day upload a video of me
how to
make a sandwich and put it on YouTube specifically for these idiots.
Yeah, that's actually what I want to say. Like, I'm still new to... Mm. I'm still getting used to the fact that I will be directly attacked with these like mm-hmm. really nonsensical insults, like "go back to the kitchen." Mm. Why is she at the kitchen? You know,
right?
But you know that seriously, I'm not affected by those kinds of comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just.
Well, have you know, I do spend yeah. a lot of time in the kitchen too. I happen to be very good cook as well. Yes.
There's nothing wrong with spending a lot of time in the kitchen. I can vouch awesome. For that as well. Yeah. Okay. And another little thing that I want to touch on from Ryan. He wants to know, because he's never heard us talk about it, do any of us play StarCraft 2?
Nope.
No.
No.
I wanted to get into it, but I don't have a gaming PC anymore.
Oh. And I am terrible at real-time strategy games. They move too fast for me to react to. There's no pause button.
It's crazy. There's no pause button. It's crazy. They actually measure your performance by like actions per minute.
I know.
Something.
It's crazy.
It really is crazy.
Yeah. So sorry. I hear it's great though. Next question comes to us from Delroy. Delroy wants to know if any of us have tried Demon Souls or if we have any interest in its sequel, Dark Souls.
I rage quit that game in about 30 minutes. That is a really hard game.
Yeah.
It is really hard.
My husband played it and I saw him getting frustrated like right away and I'm like, all right, that's not for me.
There's no learning curve. It's just a cliff that you have to climb. You're like, oh, come on, the first level. I've actually been told the first level is one of the hardest levels too.
Yeah.
Out of a very, very difficult game. And I'm like, that's just, I'm not a masochist. I'm not somebody who just wants to constantly...
Yeah, there's totally an audience for that sort of game, and I am so not part of it.
Jim Riley, apparently. Yes. Jim Riley loves that game.
100% did it.
Yeah, he platinumed it.
Oh, I've always been curious about it, though, I'll tell you that.
It is a well-made game in terms of there's nothing wrong with it. It's not broken. The animation's beautiful.
It's
the voice acting's spectacular.
It's unfairly difficult, right?
It is unfairly difficult, I would say.
Like, cheap difficult?
You know what? To those who love it, to those who are addicted to that, they're like, it's not cheap. You just have to hit... every note exactly, like it's all about timing and exact strategy. Like if you go slightly to the right instead of the left, the game will essentially punish you. It feels
like.
Then,
and if you die, then like you come back like with even less, like you in a handicapped. Yeah, yeah, you're like in a handicapped state. Like so, you're like it's even going to be even harder than for you to try and beat it.
Yeah, it's whatever. But a lot of people love the game; they're totally addicted to the challenge. But I am just like, there's a point where it is no longer frustrating, and then I feel vindicated because I got through the level. It's just frustrating to the point where I just wanted to drop kick my PS3. Out the window. I was so mad at that game. So if you like really, really, really challenging games, this will be up your alley. If you get frustrated on normal mode and some games are hard on certain games, then you will probably hate this game. Because the game hates you. That is for sure.
Alrighty. Well, that's all that we have time for. As always, questions, comments, and feedback can be sent to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/IGNGirlFight. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/IGNGirlFight. And you can follow each of us individually on my IGN. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.
Bye-bye.